And it is the Doomsday Podcast, of course. Ed Werder and Matt Mosley coming to you just in the aftermath of a 17-9 devastating loss for the Cowboys. They go in against a team that was debilitated in a lot of ways. It was missing a lot of players on offense, and the Cowboys could not get it done. In fact, they don't punch it in again. Feels like we've seen this story before, Ed. Before we start breaking it down play by play and get into somehow the players, what is your kind of overall feeling? You're just leaving the stadium, and then you have obviously were with Jerry in the aftermath. They can't even get out of town right now because of something wrong with the plane. What are your takeaways as the Cowboys, another disastrous evening?
Yeah, I would frame it like this, Matt. In the city where Michael Irvin suffered a career-ending injury that was cheered, where Tony Romo lost 44-6, fell in the shower and said, if this is the worst thing that ever happens to me, then I've lived a great life. The Dallas sucks chant began at the link 7 minutes into the game. And by the time it ended, for the first time all season, the Cowboys are not in first place. For the first time all season, they own a losing record. In failing to score a touchdown, much less clinch the NFC East, the Cowboys find themselves in contention for a far more attainable title, the biggest waste of talent in franchise history. The first Cowboys team in 60 years with a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard rusher, and now two 1,000-yard receivers. They failed to score a touchdown. They're a sub-500 team that choked in its opportunity to clinch the division. And there are all sorts of explanations and rationale, but we are finally seeing the end of the Jason Garrett era. And everybody, especially Jason Garrett, knows the players are now openly questioning the coaching staff, and justifiably so, although I would say it's fair for the coaching staff to wonder just where the leadership and the character of this football team is, because you will never confuse Michael Irvin with Amari Cooper if you watch the Cowboys compete at the highest level.
Yeah, and that's something, Ed, you and I have talked about. Here is a guy that's put up huge numbers, was such an enormous part of them turning the corner last year and having that great run that they did and getting to the divisional playoff game, winning the division as they did. And now they have a guy who, on the biggest play of the game, the season hanging in the balance, had run downfield and, you know, came out. And obviously part of that's a coaching decision. But I think you're right. I think some of the especially some of the effort on the road. Maybe we'll find out what kind of, he had a significant injury at the end of this season. But boy, it is not. You know, I would say the two players that are going into free agency, Amari, Dak. I mean, these are not players at the end of the season who you're dying to just give a ton of money away to. But you did put it in some good perspective there. Unbelievable what we thought was talent. They certainly get some production, but the numbers don't ever seem to translate to the wins. And, Ed, you've been monitoring these numbers all year long. I didn't even have it in front of me, but as I was just seeing the fact they didn't get in the end zone, it feels like the third or fourth time this season that's happened. I mean, you know, you'll go through whole seasons where they don't have that happen, and in this year it seems to be not completely out of the norm.
It's the second time this season that they failed to score an offensive touchdown, the other game being the Patriot loss. But bigger than that, Dak Prescott has had four games this year where he failed to throw a touchdown pass. All four of them were road games that the Cowboys lost: Saints, Jets, Patriots, Eagles. And, you know, you talk about the key players. I mean, Where is Zeke Elliott on a short third down play, third and short play, when they're in scoring position with a chance to tie the game? He's out for unknown reasons, whether he tapped out or rotated out, and the rookie Tony Pollard's in and he fumbles. They lose the ball. They're one big turnover of the game. Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, you know, as you mentioned, both going into this offseason looking for, you know, big contracts. Failed to connect eight times against the Eagles. That's their highest total in 24 games together. Dak Prescott, 4 for 12 for 24 yards to Amari Cooper. Only one first down in 12 targets. Amari Cooper, No 100-yard games since the loss to Minnesota. One 20-yard play the last 5 weeks.
Wow.
This guy, for whatever reason, is not the guy who changed their fortunes around when they acquired him in the middle of last year.
And that's why if you're going to pay him a huge contract somewhere even in the neighborhood of like a Michael Thomas or some of these other Julio Jones, some of these big-time receivers, boy, you got to kind of be a little worried about it as you go forward. Ed, let's. I like how you did that. There's so much to get to, not the least of which, Ed, you Witten had trouble getting separation from some of their defensive backs. He almost escaped the locker room. You were able to track him down. Just give us the overall feel. We'll hear from Witten, Amari, also Jerry, but just since you were right there on the front lines and have covering this thing, obviously, for ESPN all day and into the evening, what was the, and this was about as short a media availability as Jerry has ever had. You know, there's been a couple times he skipped out on the media, but when, as far as when he's actually there, even you, Ed, I mean, you're good at jumping in there and getting him continuing the talking, but after you did that, he was pretty much done.
Yeah, and hopefully we're going to play the entire audio, but it only lasts like 2 minutes and 3 seconds. And typically, looking at the other times I've recorded Jerry, they've been anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes long, and there's been quite a bit of questioning that he's entertained. Tonight after the game, he came out of the locker room. He walked right toward us. He made an opening statement about his disappointment that you'll hear, and he intended for that to be the only thing he was going to say. And I did get him to answer the question of what specifically disappointed him the most. He answered that. Then we were allowed in the locker room as he left, and I saw Jason Garrett walk through the locker room for probably, you know, the next to last time as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He embraced Dak Prescott, slapped him on the back, and then I saw Jason Witten, who's obviously one of the most reliable, accountable players in the history of the Cowboys organization, played more games in, you know, as a position player than anybody the organization's ever had. And I noticed he was coming out of the showers dressed with suitcase. Out the door he went, so I left Amari Cooper, who, oh, by the way, typically is very reserved, almost laconic in his style, and almost never says anything of consequence. Scathing rhetoric from Amari Cooper after this game tonight. I decided to walk away from that to go get Jason Witten, figuring if he's leaving, there must be something he doesn't want to say. And so I caught him out in the hallway, got a few minutes with him. Obviously, you know, he came back to football for moments like this, but for games like this, to win games like this, not to be embarrassed in games like this. I mean, this was a pathetic showing by this football team. And you know, when I was talking to some of the coaches on the field before the game, and, you know, one of them said, hey, if we're good enough to be in the playoffs, we win this game. You know, we win this game. There was no question in their minds they were a far superior team, that they had the far better quarterback. People on this staff don't even think Carson Wentz is on Dak Prescott's level. And they convinced the world that Prescott was going to be fine in this game.
And obviously he
played very poorly in the game. It was not a typical Dak Prescott performance, although we've seen, as I mentioned, some of these kinds of things happen to him on the road, too. And I would just say that after the game, when he was asked about his shoulder injury, he said it didn't have any effect on his performance in the game, despite the inaccurate throws he made. He did say, he did allow for the possibility that just not being a part of practice for the first time at any point during the week may have made him less sharp than he would ordinarily be. But to his credit, he made no excuses. And quite honestly, if you're going to take the field, then you can't use it as an excuse. But I just think it was a very poor showing by virtually everybody. I guess you could argue the defense played reasonably well, held the Eagles down, but they didn't really do anything of much consequence in terms of, you know, creating a turnover or some momentum-changing play that allowed the offense to get going and get in the game. But just a pathetic effort, really, I thought. A lot of apathy, a lot of, you know, disillusionment. They were far too disinterested to be upset about it afterward for the most part.
Wow, just a damning right there. And hey, there'll be a whole new coaching staff in here for us all to get to know last year because of performances like this. I was looking, and just off while you were talking, I wrote down some of the losses I could remember. What, 12-10, 13-9, 17-9. We talk about this being like some kind of juggernaut of an offense, and yet there have been so many outcomes that just don't reflect that at all. And you can say, oh, those were against good teams or whatever, but listen, you're right. Wentz, it's not like he's had a MVP-type year. They played Teddy Bridgewater. It's not like even Tom Brady's had an MVP, one of his normal years, and they just haven't got it done against any of those teams. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Let's go ahead right now and listen. This is short and sweet, but this is Jerry Jones in the aftermath of the Cowboys' 17-9 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Say the least, Philadelphia obviously gets the leg up now. We are very disappointed. When you get yourself technically in a spot to kind of come into a Philadelphia team that's got the players they've got, even though they had missing a lot of them, when you get in this spot, you give yourself a chance to be real disappointed. We are. The fact that we didn't get any scores, the fact the game turned out the way it did, they played well. We don't have a lot to say about anything else other than it's very disappointing. We all expected to leave here as the NFC's champs. We're not. We just go to Washington. But we let them really get in, do the things that played well. Wentz played well, as you all can assess for yourself, but that's about it. I don't have a lot to say about anything else, just other than we're disappointed. I thought we could come up here, and we did. We'd had good weeks practice. We thought we could come up here and play a better game than we played, and I thought right up until the very end of the thing that we could come in and make some plays and get it done. But it is a very meaningful game because of the circumstances within the league, and we've had times this year a lot when we didn't play as well as we wanted to play, but we had in mind stepping back up here and getting on a run and having some good things happen. This is a disappointing setback for that locker room and for all of us, and I know it is for the fans.
All right, there he was, and got a little bit out of him thanks to Ed Werder. We'll get to that Amari in a minute. Ed, one of the deciding plays of the game, one of the things people are talking a lot about tonight was that 4th-and-8. Dak takes a sack, gets sacked on the previous play. That's been described to me when everybody was, of course, after the games asking, okay, why is Cobb, who'd been really good in that game, especially late, and Cooper, your Cooper's the guy you're going to spend all this money on. You spent a first-round pick on him, and he was right. Not on the field with the season hanging in the balance, 4th-and-8. Here's who was: Witten, Jarwin, Tavon Austin, Michael Gallup. They threw a route. Some people would argue, hey, why are you throwing a fade route, or why are you throwing that's not a high level of probability that you're going to complete that pass. You could have thrown something shorter. All of that said, it was described to me, and I know you heard from coaches after the game, but one particular coach said to me it was a high-angle 7 route, which obviously I believe means that's 40, 50 yards downfield. You're having to run a whole lot, and so that's why out of part of the normal rotation that Cooper was removed from that game. Ed, we both know there were 3 timeouts left in that game. If you wanted to pause, I guess you could say you were saving 3 timeouts for kind of a last ditched effort, but still, at that point, you were only going to get the ball back deep in your field with no timeouts left. If you truly needed to get somebody rest, you could have, and yet the Cowboys didn't have Cobb or Cooper. Now, it seems like listening to you, you put some of the impact, you just don't feel like maybe the effort from Cooper holds any water to a guy like we both know, the Hall of Famer Michael Irvin.
I mean, I just think if you're a smart coach and you have a team full of great competitors, they're not taking themselves out of the game, and you're not taking them out of the game to stand on the sidelines when the game's being decided. Especially when you're trying to come from behind in a hostile environment, and you have what's at stake. What was at stake for them? A playoff berth at a first-round bye in the playoffs, or a home playoff game, and a division championship. You could have the third division championship in 4 years under Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, and you threw it all away. And, you know, I'll say this, though. No matter who they had on the field, Dak Prescott missed Tavon Austin on what should have been a touchdown pass and a potential two-point play to tie the game and force overtime. And then Michael Gallup, he hits him right in the hands on another deep play the very next snap, and he drops the ball. I mean, the guy's had a sensational season, and he had a very good game. Like, he probably played as well or better than anybody on offense, but he's got to make that catch. Hit him right in the hands. And that's just the kind of failure that we're talking about, and that's the reason that the Cowboys are 1-6 in one-possession games. It's the second-worst record in the league in close one-score games. Only the Bengals, who are 0-8 in those situations, are worse. And, you know, this is not the first time that we've seen the Cowboys under Jason Garrett have a chance in Week 16 or Week 17 against a division opponent to win the NFC East and fail to do so. This smacked of those three consecutive years where they were 8-8 and had a chance to win the division on the last day against each of the other three division opponents year after year after year and failed all three times. This is that same team.
Yeah, it is remarkable, and you're right. The most of all those same team members are there. Let's listen. Ed was all over the post game scene, and as you said, he had to kind of race away from Cooper to go talk to Witten. And I think Ed and maybe one other person were the only ones who talked to Jason Witten. He showed great escapability after the game. But let's listen real quick to Amari Cooper. Here are some of Amari Cooper's comments and Cooper second guessing some of the coaching.
You and Dak missed seven times. That's the most you've missed fleeting ball in the time you've been together. What seemed off to you today?
Just the way, to be honest, just the way that it wasn't nothing to do with the chemistry. It was just the way the DBs were playing those particular routes. Like, for example, on one of the routes, it was a curl, and I beat him at the line of scrimmage, and he was like under me, and obviously a curl you have to stop, and he was right there. So just the way they were playing, you know, we could have ran like more deep routes. I feel like the go ball was a good route to run tonight, but we didn't really get to it.
What most disappoints you about the performance, given what you could have achieved with a victory tonight?
The fact that we don't control our own destiny anymore.
First time all year.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, how big of a component was frustration in this game? Did you feel that as the game went along, just that it wasn't clicking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when things aren't clicking in an important game like this, and then you look at the scoreboard and you're not winning, you're losing. It's frustrating. But we all know that the game isn't over until it's over.
All right, Ed, I wanted to good stuff there, interesting from Amari.
And one other point. He not only questioned the coaching, he questioned the effort of the players. When he said, if you're going to win games like this, you've got to bring your A game, and I don't think we did that. I would suggest he could be accused of that. In my opinion, having watched the game, if I'm Jerry Jones and Amari Cooper comes in looking for his big sack of money when the season's over, you know, I'm pulling up that early drop on third down that hit him right in the chest and saying, "You want me to pay you what now?" But obviously, so he indicted the players and he indicted the coaching staff. Now he didn't indict himself in that way. But he certainly pointed the finger at other players, maybe including himself in that, but he didn't specifically say so, and he definitely called out the coaching staff.
Now, Ed, I think it's worth us admitting that after all this mess, there is a decent chance that the Eagles will go on and lose to the Giants, and the Cowboys will find a way to beat the Redskins and still sneak into the playoffs. With a dead man walking head coach and coaching staff that are all ready to get blown out of here. Everybody knows it's happening, and yet, I mean, it would not shock me if that outcome happened.
Well, and it's because of the state of the Eagles secondary, right?
Yes.
They were depleted when the game began. Let's just look overall. Overall, they went into this game without their three top wide receivers. They lost their tight end, Zach Ertz, for a while. They didn't have their starting right tackle for the game in Lane Johnson. He missed the entire game. They lost the two corners who started this game, who are not normally their starting corners. Can you imagine what the Cowboys would do in that circumstance if they'd lost seven or eight players, starters, and had to play a game where they were desperate to win and had almost no chance to stay in the playoff chase? They would have gotten blown out.
Forfeit. They may have just forfeited. Yeah.
And I think the reason you're talking about, well, maybe the Cowboys have a shred of hope, and I guess they do. Clearly, Dak Prescott was very frustrated, you know, saying, hey, I've stood up here after every game, after a lot of wins and some losses, in which I've said, hey, the good thing is we control our own destiny, and now we don't. And that's frustrating, and that's disappointing. It was right there for us, and we let it get away. And now their hopes really are on Daniel Jones,
yeah,
the controversial first-round pick of the New York Football Giants, who could reasonably throw five or six touchdown passes against the Eagles next week. The five or six touchdown passes that Dak Prescott himself was not capable of throwing against them tonight. Daniel Jones could do that because he just did it against the Redskins today.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
So the question is, can the Cowboys beat the Redskins at home? That's the bigger part of the equation to me.
Yeah, you're right, and I don't have a lot of confidence in that. I don't think I would pick them today with the Redskins with an improving young quarterback, and the Cowboys have just flatlined. I mean, that group the Eagles had out there, let's see, Jalen Mills, who the Eagles media tells me, and you've seen him some, Ed, even when they're not playing the Cowboys this year, that guy gets burned like crazy. Rasul Douglas, I mean, my gosh, that guy's been around for a while, but nobody thinks that much of him. I don't even remember who number 29 is. I know he was covering the tight end, Jarwin, on that 4th-and-8 play. Number 29 for the Eagles. I mean, these guys have been getting killed. Darby gets killed a lot. I mean, number 31 for them. You're right. If you put together one of the worst secondaries in the NFL, you would point to the Eagles, and yet the Cowboys got 9 points on them. The Cowboys walked away with 9 points, and it's a good thing they made a change at kicker, or they'd score zero, because this kicker can actually make some field goals.
Yeah, it was just a very, very poor performance. It just seemed like a lot of apathy. Obviously, the Eagles made a lot of adjustments defensively and really handled the Cowboy running game. And that's where the Cowboys thought they could win the game, even though they came out throwing. That's kind of what they did against the Rams last week, was they threw on first down and sort of got them in that mode of trying to defend the pass, and then that made them vulnerable to the run. They were unable to do that against the Eagles because Dak just was flat out inaccurate early in the game. In fact, he had career highs and incompletions in several areas on Sunday. Outside the numbers, he had 14 incompletions. That's his most, the most of his career. 15 yards downfield, he had 9 incompletions, the most of his career. And then, as I mentioned earlier, throwing to Amari Cooper, 8 incompletions, the most of his career. So, I mean, maybe Dak's being a little too proud in declining to use the injury as an excuse. But obviously, whether it was the injury itself or the inactivity during the week, he was not himself in this football game. He was not the player that they needed him to be at the quarterback position in the game of this match.
Yeah, you're right about it. He hit Gallup with that pass at the end, and then one time on a second and 10, you know, he lowered his head and plowed into them and took the hit to get down to, I think it made it 2nd and 3 at that point. Do you say the same thing about Zeke that you're kind of a little bit saying about Amari? Did you have a problem, because I'll promise you Stretch does, because I've already heard from him, with at that really crucial time when Zeke tapped out, when it's like, they're in a 3rd-and-1 situation, or do you have more understanding of that?
Well, my understanding was, and there was question at the time of why he wasn't in the game, and somebody said he tapped out, but it appeared that if we go back and look at it, he may have done that because he hit his head on the turf on the play before. So it may have been, you know, a temporary injury situation where he took himself out because of the way he was tackled, the way he hit his head on the ground the play before. If it was for any other reason, if it wasn't an injury, then I would have to question why he's not in the game, whether it was the coach deciding or he tapped himself out, because he should, I would think, any decent competitor and certainly the highest paid running back in football should be in the game when it matters the most, and he wasn't on a play that wound up being very pivotal in the game.
And, of course, on the fumble, I mean, Ed, it's 10-6 at that point. Eagles are just, they had come out and just didn't do anything, and Cowboys are on the move, and I, you just felt like, okay, this is the opportunity. This is the moment has come for the Cowboys to have a chance in this ball game. And then they're they on 31. How many times has that happened this year, Ed, where they've been like 3rd and 1, and then next thing you know, it's 4th and 2 or something like that. But in this case, they did that little, you know, the option pitch to the, you know, and take it outside, and yet it kills you that the Cowboys are supposed to have this big mauling type offensive line. They were built to ground it out, and yet in those 3rd and 1 situations, and then later on a 3rd and 1, what did they do? They threw the football. I mean, that was when Zeke, I think, was still in there. And they threw the football, and it's like they just kind of forget who they are. For 1 week, we thought maybe they had rediscovered it against the Rams, and in this game, it was, I don't know, it's like they didn't have any kind of identity. They were just out there kind of flailing around for the most part.
The only thing I thought was crucial for them, given the environment that they were trying to play in, to establish themselves early in the game and try to diminish the effect of the crowd and maybe convince the Eagles not to play hard for 4 quarters. But the only thing they did well early was the coin toss. Dak got the coin toss right this time. But then the Eagles scored on the first 2 possessions for a 10-0 lead. They had 18 plays to 3 for Dallas. Dallas starts the game with 2 3-and-outs that consist of 5 passes and 1 run. And so they were playing from behind the whole time. And as we know, I mean, one of the great, I guess not really great, but unflattering characteristics that really define this team is they're 0-7 when they trail at halftime. I mean, they haven't made a comeback in a game all year long. They haven't beaten a single team that's going to be in the playoffs this year. And like the coach told me before the game began, you know, if we belong, we'll win. And they didn't.
Yeah, except they did beat the Eagles. If the Eagles do get in, they can finally say, we beat a playoff team earlier in the season.
Not when it mattered. Not when it mattered most, but by God, we beat those Eagles.
Yeah, no, the thing, everything on the line, and they just don't show up, and they are who we thought they were is basically the
thing. Well, you remember when we thought the worst loss of the season was to the winless Jets. I think this, all things considered, was arguably worse than that.
Pitiful performance. I think if Jerry could leave Garrett and a few others, boy, Awuzie perhaps. There's some thought that Awuzie turned down a tackle at one point in the game. And
he was replaced in the game.
Was replaced, but
that was a milestone because that's the first time in a dismal season where the Cowboys have seldom played to their own expectations where they actually replaced a player in the starting lineup because of a failure to perform. It was a first show of true accountability, and it comes in week 16.
Yeah. Oh, don't forget about cutting the kicker after they let him miss 10 field goals.
Well, I guess I didn't count him, and that was belated, too.
Yeah.
I guess I was talking about it in the context of defensive starters, but
yeah,
that's a fair point. The kicker, they did finally let him go 10 weeks too late.
Yes, yes. That's right. It's a season too late. It is the Doomsday Podcast. It is time right now. We're going to get into the defense a little bit. I want to end with the defense, and then we'll talk about what is ahead for Jason Garrett and the future of the Cowboys, Ed. But it is time for our stretch marks with Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys scout and coach. Boy, he is very fired up, and I want to warn you guys, I fear there will be some expletives involved. Here he is, Glenn Stretch Smith. You are back with us, Stretch, and this is Glenn Stretch Smith. And I mean, I don't know where to start. It's hard. I'm kind of like you were a couple of weeks ago. Do you even want to throw out grades, or do we just want to kind of talk about this thing overall? Here's where I want to start. Okay, and we'll talk about the quarterback in a minute. I know you have some thoughts on that. But let's start with these wide receivers. I just talked to someone on the Cowboys staff who, and I got to throw this by you, you've coached and scouted. I want to see if this holds water to you. Okay, so on 4th and 8, season on the line, Cowboys throw a fade to Michael Gallup. Tavon Austin was on the field. Amari Cooper, your supposed number one wide receiver, on the sideline. Cobb, who'd been really good, especially late in that game, was on the sideline. Two tight ends were on the field. Here's what I was told. They ran a high a high angle seven route, and as part of their normal rotation, Cooper needed to come off the field, or he was supposed to come off the field, and so all of that was part of your normal rotation. Is that a viable excuse when the season's on the line that you would have those guys on the sideline, Cooper and Cobb?
No, absolutely not. Now, if he did run a high angle seven, a 50-yard route, and he was gassed, then use a timeout there. Take a timeout. Get your best players on the field. To me, that really reeks of being a simpleton. He's a little winded. What'd Zeke come out of the game for? Right there at the first drive when it's a 10-6 game, you're 8 or 9 plays into that first drive in the second half. A little winded. What? Winded? Again, we have our own point of reference, guys. Michael Irvin would have no more come out of the football game. You'd have had to drag him out of the game.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I saw him, I'm talking about get after Ernie Zampezi one day in practice because Ernie was trying to go quick in practice. Practice, not a game. I'm not even remotely buying that. You had guys in the game tapping themselves out. Maybe the receiver coach is running the substitutes. To hell with those excuses. You get your players in the game, and that's the head coach's responsibility to do that.
Yeah.
That's the offensive coordinator's responsibility to call the play once.
Yeah. And what did you make of that, what they ended up doing, which Dak did have time. He was not rushed on that throw, and they end up going to Gallup on what you'd call a fade route obviously it was almost a 50-50 kind of jump ball situation. There it was, 4th and 8, everything on the line. Now, from what I could see on the other side, Jarwin had a little guy on him, 29. Jarwin ran some kind of route, kind of an intermediate type route out in the flat. I mean, in my mind, you don't have to go to the end zone there. What did you make of the actual play they ran?
No, but you got what you wanted in the coverage. I didn't have issue with that. You got what you wanted. You got in man coverage. You got an opportunity to throw it deep. You didn't make the throw. You didn't make the play.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's part of football. I can't be critical of what they did. I can be critical of the personnel that's in the game because that's what I don't understand. But, I mean, obviously, coverage dictates where you go with the football. He got man coverage. It was one free, and he got the matchup that he wanted. They didn't connect. Okay. The issue I have is I believe you'd have got that coverage with 4 wide receivers in the game. I'd believe you'd have got the same coverage. Now, my question would be, okay, would you rather have Amari Cooper and Cobb running against that same set of defensive backs? Because as the injury depleted as the Eagles were, that's the same substitution group you were going to get in there. You were going to get nickel and dime in the game.
Yeah.
So my question is that really the matchup that you wanted across the board? I get it. You got what you were looking for, but. Hey, how do you know you weren't going to get another one of those shallow crosses like Dak had missed twice in the game where you could have gained 15 to 18 yards if you just stick it on his face mask? Because you got cover one. All you got to do is hit him in stride and he goes. So, I mean, to me, again, that is a simpleton way to say we're going to hurry up and get this press conference over. We got to go get on this flight.
By the way, they as of a taping, which is about 9 p.m. On Sunday evening, they have not even left the stadium. They've been sitting on the bus 2 hours after the game because there's a problem with the flight. So if that doesn't kind of sum up the whole season, I don't know what does. All right, we'll just kind of agree. I would say receivers, what do you think? B-minus, C-plus, something like that? Does that sound about right to you?
At best, a C, Matt.
Okay.
I mean, again, we had some drops in the game.
That's a good point.
See the separation that I wanted to in, when I'm looking at the game, and so at best to see,
and Gallup, while you'd like to see him hit him in stride, he's got to make that catch. After Dak, let's go to quarterback. This is a guy who was banged up during the week, listed as limited, but by the end of the week was off the injury report. In my mind, if you're out there and you're off the injury report and you got your injections or whatever, you know, we got to judge him on how he performs. And, he was loose. He was loose with his throws throughout this ball game.
Yes, loose with the football, inaccurate with the football. I mean, we could sit here and, I guess, come up with several other words. Yes. Here's the question that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
If on second and 10, we ran zone and we picked up 9 yards.
Yeah.
It was third and one in the game, and they run a bunch set and a sprint out pass. Is the quarterback hurt or isn't he hurt? Because the question really, in my mind, is if he's hurt, you should have run the football in some of
Correct.
Those critical third and one situations. They didn't do that. And so I'm gonna go with the assumption that he was healthy and good to go. And when you miss the throws that you miss, you're not a $30 million quarterback. It's the first time I think I like the quarterback. But in this football game, at this critical a time, you didn't have wind today. That wasn't an issue. Mid-40s temperature, no wet. I mean, couldn't have been any better a situation other than playing in Jerry World. And he went out and played a bad football game. Give him an F.
Whoa, whoa.
He didn't play well.
Wow.
Give him an F.
F for Dak Prescott. F for him. Okay, running back. Zeke had his moments. Second half, they finally got him loose a little bit. He started kind of banging away on that defense, leaning on him a little bit, and it looked like the dam was going to break. They get down there, it's 10-6, they're moving the ball, and of course, as you said earlier, he tapped himself out. Pollard comes in, the fumble occurs, Fletcher Cox forces that ball through and free. I mean, how do you assess the running backs?
I mean, I champion a running back. I think he's a heck of a football player. He does everything. He can block, runs the football with a sense of urgency, can protect, big-time pass protector. But in this game, at this time, okay, tap yourself out, second and one, you needed to come out. Maybe your helmet got ripped up a little bit.
Yeah.
I looked at the tackle over and over. Maybe it kind of grazed you. Okay, you had to kind of come off. But you got to come back in the game, third and one. Third and two, you got to get your ass back in the game. I take that into consideration when I'm grading guys. Because all of a sudden, to me, I see him, I see Cooper out of the game. I mean, is there an issue with your Shiva getter? You don't want in the game? You don't want the game in a critical situation? You're the guy that just got paid. Get your ass in the game and go put the bit in your mouth and hammer it in there. Hey, I'm going to give two grades. I'm going to say he played a heck of a football game, gave great effort from a playing standpoint, from a toughness standpoint, from a mental standpoint. Taking yourself an F. Can't take yourself out of the game.
Yeah. Wow. F for the toughness. F for the quarterback. The O line. I saw quite a few clean pockets back there. Dak took a few shots. They obviously weren't able to get the running game going until finally there in the second half. What did you make of how the O-line played?
I thought this was a group that played okay for you today. I really did. I thought that they – now, you know, early in the game, hey, the one thing that Philadelphia and Jim Schwartz were not going to do, they were going to make Dak beat them.
Yeah.
If they were going to lose the opportunity to win the NFC East, they were going to make the quarterback beat them. And so they can make – a defense can make you one-dimensional. And it looked a little rough early because there were some 7-8-man boxes when you were in 11 personnel. That's tough sledding down in there. I thought they adjusted well in the second half. I thought they blocked the outside zone really well. I thought they protected – well today, and because of that, even with Looney coming in for Suofilo, this group has got depth. They didn't turn anybody loose from a blitz standpoint. I'm going to give that group a B in a very workmanlike effort in Philadelphia. And they played up front well enough to be able to have a win in that football game.
All right, let's look at the other side of the ball. Let's look at the defensive line and the linebackers, and then I really want to get your take on Goddard. Stuck it to the Cowboys. We knew they had basically two tight ends, and they had a bunch of nobodies at wide receiver, and a couple of those guys made decent plays in this game, but for the most part, we knew coming in they had a decent little rookie running back, and they had two tight ends. That's really all you needed to truly worry about. Let me just say this. Who do you, when you kind of start looking at why Goddard had such a big day in these tight ends, I mean, these are good tight ends, but who bears the most responsibility for that?
Well, I mean, I think that both, you know, when you look at these and you look at Ertz and Goddard, I mean, they can press the field vertically and create some issues for you because both of them are pretty good blockers at the point of attack. You know, depending on the coverage you're playing. I mean, the Cowboys just picked up Malcolm Smith. He had to play some. He got matched up and got overmatched a little bit in the game. Hard to be critical of that. Guy hadn't practiced probably 2 days and expected to come in and play in that situation. But still defensively, I thought the schematically, you should have, and I'm talking about Rashard, they could have done something different to say, we're going to take away Carson Wentz's feel-good guys. We're going to take these tight ends away. If they want to let the former quarterback, Ward, from U of H, if they want to let him beat them, well, maybe he beats them. If they want to let Arcega Whiteside, who really to me is an H, I mean, you know, he's kind of a 4.75 guy. He didn't threaten you deep. Okay, well, he gets you. But to me, they didn't take away those tight ends. They allowed them to kind of roam in the middle of the field. They allowed them to run those options, some of that inside stuff. And for that, I mean, I'm gonna question the Dallas defensive coaches. I didn't think the linebackers played bad. Now Sean Lee, again, he's limited. He looked a little old at times. I gave the linebackers a C. Defensive line, you know, didn't get pressure until late in the game. They kind of just had a so-so effort. They did a nice job of stopping the run, but I mean, Philadelphia is no juggernaut on offense. I gave the defensive line a C.
Okay.
Now we're finally going to get to the defensive backs, Matt.
Okay, good.
Because finally
good.
They took Woozie out of the game.
Yeah.
Took his ass out of the game because there was a play in the third series where he turned it down. Now, I haven't seen anybody do that in a Cowboy uniform, and I can't tell you when. I'm talking about turned it down. That's a problem. I mean, that's a real problem. Now, all year you've heard me talk about these defensive backs. I mean, the first play of the game, he sees the dig and almost won't break underneath it. He sticks his foot in the ground. He can go break, doesn't break the pass up. Okay, that happens. But when you turn it down, when you don't want to go make a tackle,
yeah,
when you don't want to stick your face in there, man, I'm done with that. I'd have cut his ass after the football game. He wouldn't. I tell you what, the Cowboys would still be waiting on the charter. His ass would be sitting up by the Schuylkill River waiting to get on a Continental flight. And Continental doesn't even fly anymore.
It is Glenn Stretch Smith. Woozie would have left him on the tarmac, just like what happened to Lane Kiffin all those years ago at USC. I did think your man Byron Jones made a couple plays on the ball. Every once in a while he got involved, although that one that they missed, I guess that was Jordan Lewis is who we decided that ended up being. You know what I'm talking about.
Other than a Woozie, Matt. Yeah, other than a Woozie, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I gave that group a C.
Okay.
But, I mean it is sickening. I haven't. It really is. It made me sick at my stomach to watch him, to watch him turn it down. And I don't like being real critical of players. I think it's a tough game. It's unnatural. There's nothing natural about playing football. But I mean, boys, to turn it down, that tells me everything I need to know about your character, about what kind of person you are. And I really would. I'd run his ass out of here.
All right, special teams-wise, I thought Kai Forbath continues to be, like, maybe the best player on this team. He's consistent. I know they gave up a couple of returns that, you know, kind of make you mad, but I don't know if that's really his fault. He's not the biggest leg in the world, but, I mean, he's nails from 49 yards, which is the opposite of what Maher, and you know what, if they'd had this Forbath guy all year, maybe they would have made, you know, instead of 20 for 30, maybe they'd have been like 26 for 30, 27. I mean, this kid can kick it a little bit. So that was, you know, that's kind of my takeaway on the special teams. Anything jump out at you?
Yeah, they just don't do anything. I mean, they just, you know, the special teams, we hadn't got a play out of them all year. They don't make any big plays. They give up, you know, they give up some returns here or there. They just don't do anything. I mean, it's just, you know, they just, that's a problem I have. And I'm talking about the coverage units. I'm talking about the return units. I mean, it's almost like you almost look at them and think, you know, God, do you guys even practice? I mean, even practice, even get timed. I mean, the first return, I mean, they kick it to Pollard, and he, you know, stumbles out to about the 15-yard line. I mean, you know, not a hat on everybody. It didn't look like there was anything even remotely coordinated up from a return standpoint. You know, the special teams and the defensive backs, I mean really, I as bad as I hate to say it, I'm almost glad it's over. The pain of watching that group is, you know, and I've used all kinds of sayings, and it's just painful to watch them play.
Man, I tell you, it is it's a painful all around, and boy, they don't deserve it. You know, it'd be a shame to see them somehow sneak in, but you never know what could happen next week. They could beat the Redskins, and the Giants could beat the Eagles, and they could sneak right on into this thing. But for now, let's call them what they are. They're dead ducks. I mean, they just don't really deserve to go on, and the only reason they do is because everybody else is so bad. And it's a pitiful thing. Stretch, you did it really well. You always do. We appreciate you. It's been a great season. Good luck tonight on TV. We'll be watching your work here from the Frito Nation Productions in far north Dallas. Give Dell my best if he still remembers me.
All right, man. Merry Christmas to you guys.
There he goes. Merry Christmas to Glenn Stretch Smith. As he heads on his way, hangs up the phone on us aggressively. I do want to say this is a good time for me to tell you about the Hudson Financial Group. Oh, man, they have become our title sponsor. Randy Hudson, owner, broker, Hudson Financial Group, independent property casual and life casualty and life insurance / investment firm. One of the things they do is create great relationships. They'll start you out. Okay, we'll handle your insurance. You want your life insurance? You bet. You bet we can handle that. And the great thing about them, and I don't know if I've made this point enough, they are not beholden to any certain company. They'll take whatever meets your needs the most. Wherever you are financially, wherever your business is, they are an independent company, so they can use all these different sorts of companies to represent you. And I think that's a great thing. He was a 4-year letterman, offensive lineman at North Texas, the University of North Texas. They love him. He's a big booster over there, and boy, he's going to have to turn that team around after kind of a rough season this year. But the man has over 31 years of experience in the insurance industry, and quite honestly, he just knows this stuff. He's really good at it, and we appreciate our association with him. We've really, really enjoyed it. And the thing is, boy, if you do anything with Randy Hudson, you have a friend for life. And he's one of those guys that sticks with you through thick and thin. And, boy, I tell you, he's a good guy to know during these kind of crazy times in our world. Okay, here's the website, www.hfgventures.net. That's hfgventures.net. Or you can call them 469-402-0320. All right, there he was. And, Ed, that is a fiery couple of Fs. A couple of Fs were handed out. You
wow.
Heard the F to the quarterback. And that was a rough one. And I'm trying to think. Boy, he gave a maybe a C to the wide receivers. Gave another F. I'm trying to think who he gave that other F to. There's, oh, boy, he's really mad at Awuzie in a big way. He thought he turned down some, showed, we might have even called him a coward, which, that's going pretty strong there. But, okay, the defense. We do need to talk a little bit about the defense. Most of the show, we have talked about the offense and how they perform. Eagles coming into this game. Ed, correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, who are the weapons for the Eagles? The two tight ends, Ertz, Goddard, and pretty good little rookie
Sanders,
running back, Sanders. Yeah, and that, yeah, and I like that other guy, 35. They got a little guy. But the three guys, the Sanders, the rookie back, thought he was okay. He'd done some nice things, and he was coming off a really nice performance in these two tight ends. There was nobody at wideout. Whatever they call him. For some reason, they were calling him like Ortega, but I thought it was Arcega. But anyway, that guy's not that great. Ward is a former quarterback who's kind of turned himself into a wide receiver. And then another
– Six times.
Yes. And then 81 came out of nowhere. Like, I don't think he'd ever – you know, he'd been, made like two snaps in his life. 81 shows up on the scene. Maybe he has two catches in his career or something like that. They were playing with
Joshua
a group
– Perkins, a tight end?
Maybe so. Yeah, he's been very limited, and 81 showed up out of nowhere. I thought there was another guy that showed up, but I can't even remember his name. But anyway,
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah, no, I love him.
They had Miles Sanders and Boston Scott.
Yes,
they did not have their starting running back, Jordan Howard.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have their starting running back. They didn't have their starting right tackle. They didn't have any of their top three receivers, and they lost their starting corners during the game. And the Cowboys just cannot overcome that kind of team.
No, they were leaking oil, and again, when it was 10-6, Cowboys had a chance.
Remember, Miles Sanders turned down a touchdown at the end of the game, right?
Oh, it could have been. You're right. 24-9.
The Cowboys are trying to get them stopped and force a punt so they can throw four more bombs and maybe connect on one of them and tie the game. And Sanders blows through a huge opening, and he scored. He would have scored from 60 yards out, but he smartly slides down,
yes,
and they run the clock out on the Cowboys.
Reminiscent of Brian Westbrook years ago doing that like at the one-yard line late in a game. He, instead of running it on in, he went ahead and just kind of downed it at the one-yard line. Eagles, once again, outsmart the Cowboys. Dak Prescott's record falls to 5-3 against the Eagles, and he is, boy, what a struggle it's been recently for him and the entire team. Okay, so Goddard, those two, the other thing I would bring up, they don't know how to defend a screen. Okay, it's like they've never seen a swing pass and a screen pass. They don't know how to tackle that. And even the great Sean Lee, you know, he's one point they kind of fake something, and Sean Lee turns his back to the play, heads upfield, and they throw a swing pass. And, I mean, I don't know how it went 19, 20 yards. One of those plays, of course, goes for like 38 yards. I think that's the play where Jordan Lewis just vacates the area and leaves poor – who's the Seahawks guy that won the Super Bowl MVP? Malcolm somebody? Malcolm Smith?
Yeah, Malcolm Smith was playing in the game. He just off the street.
Yeah, he showed up on the scene. He's running. I was like, wait, who is this 43? It's like, oh, that's a former.
That's a linebacker.
That's a former Super Bowl MVP running around. The defense was not. I mean, again, they had some moments. They did okay against the run for the most part, but much of the game.
Here's what I would say about the defense. In addition to the play I just mentioned where they're trying to get the ball back one more time and they fall flat on their faces, is when DeMarcus Lawrence is matched up against a replacement right tackle, I expect a great game out of a guy I just gave $65 million to and has rewarded me with 5 sacks. Now, everybody says he plays hard, and I don't have any reason to believe that's not true. But when you're up against what do they call him, the big V?
Vitae, yeah.
Yeah, when you're up against him and you're a $65 million player, I think you should own that guy all day, and it should be quite obvious that he's overmatched.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
And I don't think that was very often the case in this game.
No, I didn't either. And Robert Quinn did get in there and get a strip.
Knocked the ball loose once, yeah.
Got a strip. But again, they weren't just dominant. I mean, honestly, Woods was very dominant the week before. He made some okay plays in this game. I don't think he was dominant. Actually, 79 made some decent plays in this game against the run. I thought he played really hard.
Michael Bennett?
Yes. I thought Michael Bennett played Cowboys, of course, they love to line up in the neutral zone. That's one of their favorite things to do. I did see one time I was watching for it late, and and your man Bennett was way over the blue. You know, they have that line, the line of scrimmage. There's the yellow line, but then there's that blue line they have now on Fox.
Yeah, I'm not watching the game on TV. I'm at the game, so that's not on the field matches. So
yeah, you can look upstairs. You can look up. You can look up above you and see the monitor. But bottom line is, he did at least kind of at one point notice that he was on the wrong side of the line of scrimmage and jumped back. So I thought that was a great sign of progress for this team. All right, we've hit a lot of this thing. Ed, Jason Garrett, did he look about the same after this one as he always does? And do you almost feel like Jason Garrett, there's almost a sense of relief that as his decade or whatever it comes down to with the Cowboys comes to an end, do you almost sense that he's kind of ready for the next chapter and he's resigned to his fate? I mean, this staff is gone. I mean, I can't imagine anybody from this current staff being back next season.
Well, I don't know about that, but and I don't know how he views this whole thing. I would guess that he feels that he's been treated unfairly in the whole thing. Because I know in the off season that his position with Jerry was, I want a contract extension. You know, we won the division. We won a home playoff game. I deserve the security that comes with doing those sorts of things. And he was denied that. And then he said, if I have to coach the final year of my contract to get extended, then I want to be responsible and call my own plays. And that's the trade-off. Like, I got to get one or the other. I either get the extension or I call my own plays. And Jerry didn't allow either one of those things to happen. He promoted Kellen Moore. So I just wonder, given all of the offensive failures, how much Jason kind of enjoys the fact that it's been an offensive issue lately in these most meaningful games, in these road games, that's been kind of undermined their efforts to win. That it's come that you could actually, in his case, point to, hey, you know, you got a first year offensive coordinator, yeah, you wanted creativity, you threw away experience. This is what you get. You know, these are the growing pains that you talked about with me. Like, all the years you justified having me here was, you made an investment in me years ago and you lost sometimes because I was trying to figure the whole game management thing out. Well, now we're doing the same thing because we don't have an experienced play caller. And yeah, you could have had me doing it. You know, and I've been very good at it, very successful at it. Good enough at it, you made me the head coach. And now you want this guy to do it. Well, this is what you get.
I kind of like where you're going with this. My interpretation of what you just said is that Jason tanked the season on purpose.
No, I'm just saying that maybe he thinks that while he's probably almost certain to lose his job, maybe there's a little poetic justice in how it happened.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And then if you know, depending on who you believe, could the Giants be interested in him? Who will the Giants will be the coaching carousel? Will there be some of these guys like Rivera? You know, the guy from Green Bay, McCarthy, your old pal McCarthy's really been lobbying, and he's done some things to try to prepare to get back in the league. So there's some retreads that could be out there, as well as some hot college names. But I think
we'll both agree.
Well,
once the coaching search begins, and certainly once it's culminated, I'm sure we'll address that issue in a special edition of the Doomsday Podcast.
Yes.
But one point I'd like to make on that is people have talked about, hey, well, Ron Rivera could come here and he'd be a nice fit. He's been to a Super Bowl. He was hired by them the same year that Jason was hired, promoted on a permanent basis by Jerry to run the Cowboys. And actually, one of the pluses would be, hey, he'd bring Norv Turner with him. We know that what Norv Turner did with Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith and coordinating the offense, and he's one of the best play callers in the entire league, very experienced guy, and it could be him and Rivera. Well, guess what? It was going to be him and Rivera when they hired Wade Phillips, because if Norv Turner had gotten the job, his defensive coordinator was going to be Ron Rivera. So Jerry's already turned this package down once.
Yes. Yeah, you're totally right. It was between those two, and Jerry went with Wade Phillips. We'll see this time.
He went with Wade Phillips because he had Jason Garrett, and he thought so much of Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator at the moment and a potential head coach. And now look where they are all these years later.
They've just wasted a bunch of years. The prime.
They wasted a decade.
And the prime of some of these players' careers. I mean, now some of these guys are fairly young that are still around here, like Zeke and Amari. But they wasted
the whole, you know, Jason Witten, Tony Romo, DeMarcus Ware era. I mean,
absolutely.
They did have some good players, and they have some now. Now, if I'm them, I'm questioning some of these guys and just, you know, how bad they want it. And we've talked in maybe on other shows about, are there enough dogs on this team, you know? And maybe there aren't. And maybe the guys we thought aren't.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see a lot of dogs out there tonight in that sense.
I saw a lot
of them in a different sense.
We got a couple of dogs on this show, and I appreciate that. Boy, you did not spit the bit. When the bit was handed to you, Ed, you ran with it. Great work on ESPN. Strong work tonight as you make your way back to Dallas tomorrow. We will react to everything that happens, no matter what happens next week at the Redskins. I assume, Ed, you'll be on the ground to kind of start readying yourself for the end of the Garrett era. If this truly is the last game, we'll see how quickly all that happens. There's a chance I'll be in New Orleans. I know that sounds strange, but I've got to be in New Orleans for Sugar Bowl coverage for one of my other gigs. But anyway, we'll make it all work, and
Baylor?
Correct. Baylor in Georgia will be playing the Sugar Bowl.
But your friend Coach Rule could be involved in the eventual job search.
Exactly. So I'll be right there in New Orleans. You'll be representing us at Arlington next week. And thanks to Frito Nation Productions, Mark Frito Friedman doing great things up here in far north Dallas, Ross Hudson, his dad Randy Hudson, Hudson Financial Group. Ed, I want you to say goodnight to everybody.
Good night, everybody, and Merry Christmas.
Oh, man, Merry Christmas from Ed Werder and the entire Doomsday Podcast, all our cast of characters, including Glenn Stretch Smith. Good night, everybody.